Hi, everybody. Welcome to another Prog Report podcast interview. This is Roy. My guest on this episode is singer and founder of The Pineapple Thief, Bruce Sword. They have a new album on the way called It Leads to This. Comes out on February 9th. We had a chance to talk about the new album and a whole lot more. But before I get started, just a reminder, subscribe to our YouTube channel, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on all our socials and progreport.com. And now my chat with Bruce Sword.
Excellent.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. Doing well. Like your setup there. Good to see you back in the studio. Do you live in the studio, or are you in there basically every day?
Yeah, yes, in answer to that. It's quite nice when you go on tour, because then it's like you get out of the routine.
Right.
But yeah, luckily I'm really busy. So it's nice I'm in here, but like say the routine is take the kids to school, in the studio all day then.
So what's a typical, you don't have an album out, right? And you're not sure if you're working on something or not. Your typical day going down into the studio, what happens?
So it depends. So I remember last year I did this early years box set, which was like the first six albums that the Pineapple Thief did. Right. And I was remixing them in surround sound and Dolby Atmos. So my studio is Dolby Atmos equipped. So I've got speakers in the roof.
Oh, wow.
So I would, that took me months and months. So every day I'd be doing that. And then if I'm writing, then it's very different. I'll have a guitar. I'm surrounded by guitars in here. So I'll be creating music. And quite often I'm mixing other bands as well.
Yeah, you've been doing a lot more mixing, a lot more like becoming one of the guys to go to for the 5.1 and all that kind of stuff. Big Train, I think you just did, right? And the
just did, yeah.
Yeah. So what is that like, stepping into shoes of another band? How's that?
It's actually quite scary. It's a lot of responsibility, especially when the band has sort of been living with this stereo mix that they've had for so long, and so they know exactly how they want it to sound, but they can't do the 5.1 or the Atmos. So I have to take the sessions, and quite often it can be quite surprising, because when you take it out into the 3D, it's quite a shock. But it was good. Greg came down to my studio to listen to the Big Train record, and he was like, wow, this is amazing. This is brilliant. The one issue about Dolby Atmos, and I don't know if you've listened to any, but
I haven't actually, and I would love to. I don't know where to do it around where I am.
Well, that's the thing. This is the thing, you see, because Dolby, Apple Music and Amazon HD and Tidal, they all do it through headphones. For what they call binaural, and it's supposed to give the effect of 3D, but if you're used to the stereo, it can sound really weird. And if the
I've tried that on the Apple Music Spatial Audio or whatever, it didn't do much for me.
And so when you share it, and when bands go, oh, it's available on Dolby Atmos, and then they actually do what you did and go, oh, okay, let's listen to the spatial version. They go, what's this? Why the mix sounds all strange, because you're so used to stereo, it can freak people out, and so it's quite a challenge sometimes doing it.
But I think if you have, like, I would imagine your setup is, because it's in the studio and you're doing it, you're doing it for the purposes of creating it, it's probably as good as it can be, and that's really the place you want to hear it, right? That's then it sounds proper.
Yes, exactly. And my personal, it's the best places to listen to it is not too big. I know that you can, theatres, for instance, are set up for Dolby Atmos with like hundreds of speakers. But sometimes when you're panning a band around, it sounds a bit strange if there's a sound coming from right in the, the corner, 100 meters away. It's not really set up. I think it's perfect if you've got a smaller room like this, that maybe sort of 10-20 people maximum is
it does
the best.
Sound like it's become a thing that's taking on a little bit more though, so maybe it'll stick around. It seems like it might.
You never know. Never know. I mean, 5.1 has always been for the enthusiast, and it's always been good, especially in the prog rock world. There's loads of people that just love it, and But I think, yeah, and I think the whole thing about experiences, you know, that they were talking about the old U2 in the Sphere thing, the everyone's talking about music as and going out to experience live music as an experience, not the old school go and just watch a band jump around a stage.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? I had that experience this last week, and I saw two bands back to, you know, one night and another night. And on the first night, I saw Mr. Big, which was great. And that was four guys on a stage, nothing else, playing music. And they kicked ass, and it was awesome. And there was an energy, and it was great. The next night, I saw Tool at a big amphitheater, you know, thing with massive screens and a whole light show and the whole thing. And that was great too. And they were completely different and both equally awesome. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? One wasn't better than the other to me. Seeing four guys on stage who are amazing musicians play is awesome. That never gets old.
Yeah. That's my preference. And certainly my preference with the Pineapple Thief is, well, it's five of us, but yeah, it's just five of us just playing. And that's what we want people to look at.
I don't see an issue ever with that kind of show, but you know. Anyway, we got on a whole of tangent on all this other stuff, but I want to talk about a couple of records. We never got to speak about your Luminescence solo album, which I loved, and it was a beautiful record, really cool. Congrats on that. I think that was well received, right? I mean, you had to have been pleased with the response. I feel like people loved that unanimously.
They did, yeah. It's strange because I've got the Pineapple Thief. You kind of realize that even though it's, you know, I'm really proud of that record, it's still much, much smaller, you know. And then you realize how do you get like your music out to more people? And, you know, and people ask me this all the time, you know, when I'm mixing smaller bands, they go, Bruce, you've got any advice about how do we get to like where the Pineapple Thief have got? It's really, really difficult. It's like, you know, and now I realize it firsthand with the solo music and having done a tour where it was me and John, who's my old mate John, the bass player from the Pineapple Thief. But it was the lowest budget tour you could do. You know, we were driving ourselves around in vans, staying in hotels, doing that for two. We drove 5,000 miles in 2 weeks, I think it was, around Europe. And it just made you realize how expensive it is to do these tours. You're playing to a fraction of the people that come to Pineapple Thief shows. So the money you're not making, really, we didn't make any money. So yeah, it did make you realize, you know, how do you get in the noise that so many bands, how do you get it out there?
So, it's hard. It's really hard. I mean, I can tell you just from the Prog Report website and the amount of bands and albums we get sent every day to listen to and review, and it's crazy. It's just ridiculous. It's impossible. Yeah. And I feel bad sometimes because I know we can't get to everything, and certainly not, you know, the bands that no one knows, right? That's a tough one. So
no, it's tough. I know, and
try, but it's really hard.
That's why people like you are so important, because you need people like you to curate all this. You've got to go through, you've got to sift through all that so that we can actually, you know, when you're looking, because people always say, Bruce, are you listening to any new music? And you think, yeah, I try. But so much, it takes so long to actually get to that song that goes, oh yeah, that's doing it for me. Yeah. And it's so important that we have, the music journalism is so important.
Yeah, it's a tough one, but the new Pineapple Thief record, it leads to this. I want to talk about that. Comes out really soon, February 9th. You're a short kind of lead time for that thing. But man, 25 years now is the band, right? You're coming up on 25 years, and which is amazing. And 25 years into it, I think maybe you've made your best record. I think this thing is amazing. And I've been obsessed with it the last couple of weeks listening to it.
Thank you very much.
I think it's awesome. And I read something, and maybe it was in a press release or something, that it was described as, what's it called? Fat free, you know, but man, I think that, I don't know, that almost short sells it a little bit. 'Cause it's not short, straightforward, simple rock songs. Like, I mean, no. There's a lot to every song. They're really intricate. Every time you listen, you pick out another part. Every song has its own unique story. It's just fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Talk about the process of this one. How did it start? How did you write it?
So I think one of the things I've, you know, we talk about 25 years is, and it's amazing. And also because, like you said, you might have just done your best record. And certainly commercially, after 25 years, we're still on the up, which is just
wild.
I definitely recommend doing it that way. You know, don't start at the top and go down.
Right.
But I think back to the career and so many epochs and so many moments, you know, get starting and then getting the record deal with K-Scope. And then I think the big thing was meeting Gavin and Your Wilderness coming out. And then all of a sudden things really took off. And I think the new album is the culmination of that kind of, so far, of that relationship. And, you know, having Gavin Harrison in the band and as a drummer, you know, one of the best drummers, if not the best drummer working today, is an amazing thing to have. So you're going to use it, you know, and it really did feel like the relationship that we have now with Gavin has really matured.
Yeah.
And to the point where I spent quite a long time in Gavin's studio writing together. So it was, I think that really does come across in the way the songs have come together. And, you know, we've got a really good relationship, really honest. You know, we spent a long time together now on tours together and buses and, you know, in the back of venues, and you really get to know one another doing that. So I think that really comes across, and that's what it felt to me. It felt like the band was working as a real entity in the best it's ever been, I think. And
yeah,
that relationship.
It sounds in listening to it that, and I know from his history of all the bands and all the things that he does, he is very much a drummer that contributes writing to each song. The parts he plays, they can't be changed out and just something else. It's like specific to the song. It's what it sounds like. And so how is working with him when writing a song? Does he come up with something first and you come in with something else, or you're back and forth, you know, throwing ideas, or how does that work?
A bit of both. So there's a few songs where I would come up with some verses and choruses and things like that. I've never finished a song. I would just send, so when I feel myself going, I'm in danger of actually finish writing this song, I'll send it to Gavin and just see if he likes it. Because if he doesn't like it, then we don't want to do songs where someone in the band is like not into it. Everyone, luckily, it's very rare that there's usually a consensus. If Gavin doesn't like it, then John, Steve also say, Bruce, that idea sucks. So it's quite nice. And then it will go back and forth. But there's other occasions where, especially with the new record, where I was saying that I was actually in his house for quite a long time writing, where Gavin would actually have a riff. There's a song called Every Trace of Us, which has this starts with this guitar riff, which was actually Gavin came up with it, but it looped. It was kind of like, I think it's more of his sort of jazz head, where they would just jam over this riff, just but that didn't modulate. There's no chord progression, but it was nice, really nice. And I said, yeah, really like that. But I said, I can't sing over it, you know, so I took the riff, and I sort of came up with some more chords, and he was like, oh yeah, Bruce, yeah, that's great. And it was that kind of chemistry that was really nice. Yeah. And I think that when you've got a band that you trust, and you can let go without really worrying about it, then what happens is so much bigger than any individual. You know, what the song that comes out the other side is so much bigger than any single person could ever have done. And it's really nice. And like you said, after 25 years, I think that's the fact that I've learned to let go has been is one of the best things I've ever done, to be honest.
Yeah. Cause the first, however many albums was solely you, right? Writing and coming up with everything.
Yeah. And that's why when I look back on the 25 years, even though that it's had the Panoply moniker, it's been I can just sort of see these epochs of the band, so it doesn't feel like a sort of 25 year slog of me putting out these. So it's almost like in the old days where it's effectively a solo project and I made up band members in the credits. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like there's so many different progressions, and this latest incarnation where we've got Gavin, we've also got Baron Matthews, our touring guitarist, who played a lot of guitar on the album, so there's effectively five of us really contributing. it feels like that this has only been going on for four albums for me,
right.
You know, since we met Gavin, this current version. So it still feels incredibly fresh. And people always say, how do you still find inspiration after 25 years? I said, well, it doesn't feel like 25 years. You know, it still feels new. Nice.
So you guys actually were able to write and record in a room together?
Yeah. Yeah. So right.
That's not done. Have you been able to do that before with this lineup?
No. And I remember we were on the last tour and I was chatting to Gavin and I said, right, what we were talking about the next record and we were just thinking, how can we mix things up a bit? And we just thought, Gavin always used to have these stories about like when he tried to do it in the old days with where the whole band would get together. And he said, you'd spend like 4 hours and you'd come away with a jam in E and it would just, nothing would ever, you'd never come up with a song. But I think he liked the idea of maybe just keeping it with two people where you'd literally, especially me as a traditional songwriter in a band, where these ideas, and the idea is that the dream of a songwriter is that it snowballs. You get an idea and then Gavin goes, yeah, that's great. And then it just has its own legs. The terror for me when I was driving up there was like, well, what if it's a disaster? What if it nothing works? You know, it'll be really awkward. So yeah, the first time I was going there, I was thinking, oh. So yeah, it was nice. It was nice that it all came together. So I had a little mobile recording set up it was quite funny. So we knew something was happening and Gavin said, yeah, let's do this middle section. And he would go away and play on the drums. And I would take the ideas that he'd done, go into the next room with my mobile recording, and I'd sing some ideas and play some guitar. And actually, funnily enough, a lot of that guitar stayed for the final mix. I tried to re-record it thinking, no, I can play that better. I'll play it much, you know, I'll really sit down and play it properly. And it just didn't have the same vibe.
You hear that all the time. That happens with bands all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, maybe that's why you can hear the sort of freshness and excitement in the music. I don't know that you,
I hope so. Yeah.
They were together doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
How long does it take the process from start to finish writing and recording?
Yeah. Well, this one, it was the longest ever for Pineapple Thief. I think, you know, we had to let Gavin go for a while for Porcupine Tree reunion. So that sort of added a bit of time, but it's kind of these things where it's done when it's done. Some of them just come together really quickly, you know, and some other songs you kind of, you're polishing and honing. And I think after doing it for so long, you set the bar higher and higher and higher. And so that can make it sometimes, because I've got the luxury of having a studio like this, sometimes it's a curse because you just keep going and keep going and keep polishing. And you don't want to, I don't want to give it away. You just keep going. I kind of wonder, you know, you're talking about keeping things fresh. I always wonder what it was like in the old days where a record company would say, right, you're going in this residential studio for 6 weeks. You come out with an album. I want singles. And that's it. It's got to be done.
That's it.
And how exciting that would be, you know. So I always think, yeah, that would be nice. Maybe we should do it like that one day. But yeah, it does. And we're lucky that because we mix it. You know, obviously, we record, mix and everything ourselves. Gavin mixes the drums, which is nice. So yeah, it doesn't actually, I think it doesn't take too long in itself, but the process can be spread over months and months. In this case, years.
I'm also curious, because the album only has 8 songs, if that was intentional to keep it short and not over, you know, so most albums have, you know, double that sometimes, right? So
they do. I mean, it's weird. You look back on the history of like the album lengths. So in the 60s, and obviously were very short, 70s, a little bit longer maybe, but they were, it was vinyl that kept it to sort of 35, 40 right. minutes. Then the CD came out and it was like, yeah, 74 minutes, let's fill it up. And I always remember like some of the albums, like the old Smashing Pumpkins records that just went on for too long. And now I think it's coming full circle. And there was actually a driver from the record label because they said vinyl is so expensive now to manufacture that if it goes over sort of 50 minutes, especially, then they've got to do a double. And if you start going over sort of 20, 22 minutes in length, then you're compromising quality. So there is a technical reason to keep it to 40, but I think when we put the track list together, it just felt right. It just felt like 40 minutes didn't feel too short or too long, certainly for us. I'm sure there'll be people out there who go, it's too short.
You know, as a fan, you always feel like you want more songs. But honestly, yeah, I'm with you. The album just works as it is, you know.
And good.
It doesn't overstay its welcome. You know, is one or two more songs would be good too. But, you know, it doesn't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we did think. We did have about another 25 minutes of material, but we thought actually what we'd do is we could release that as a companion EP or something.
Sure, there you go. Later. Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about a few of the songs. So you had the first single, "Every Trace of Us," really cool song. Talk about that one. How does that one come together?
Yeah, so that one, like I said, was one of the songs that I wrote with Gavin, and where he actually came up with the original, you know, the first. Normally, it's me that will come up with the initial idea, but actually, Gavin came up with the initial idea, and then the song just grew from there. And I went into the other room, wrote the chorus, and one of the best things I think about that song for me is actually the bass line. So when I came up with the chorus, I straight away sent it to John. And John, the bass player, he's quite, if there's an obvious root note, he'll ignore it and he'll put a different note in to completely change the emphasis of a part. And he came up, when he sent me this bass part, it's funny because he sent me these bass parts and I drop it into the song. So it's brilliant. The download and straight. And I listened to it and I was like this. I was like, wow, what is that? It's completely taken over. And the line he did for the chorus was like almost like a lead line. It's the hook. So it was just a really good example of how the band works together. It was just one of those songs that, you know, I think all the best songs that we did, and like I said, there was an extra sort of 25, 30 minutes of material. The best songs were the ones that just came together easily.
Right. Yeah. But the song I've been stuck on, and I don't know, maybe it's my favorite or my favorite this week, you know, is Now It's Yours.
Oh, yeah. It's
just really cool, really different, very mellow kind of in the beginning, has that cool riff in there. You know, how does a song like that come together?
I was actually done with Gavin. So we actually had these, I had the initial idea. So we had this song that started like that sort of the slightly melancholic intro.
Yeah.
And then it just stopped, and it was one of those moments where we said, oh Bruce, remember that idea you had that we did that just kind of we'd put in the cupboard, and we got out of the cupboard again and we listened to it and we think, I know, why don't we just go into something completely different? And Gavin actually played this riff on his got a whirly in his studio, the riff. I go, all right, okay, cool. Let's put that on guitar. And it's just one of those things where it just happened. The whole song just sort of came together. I'm glad you like that one. Yeah.
The hook kind of in the first half of the song, so you're singing the verse, and then the hook is it's just like the subtlest little key change in there.
Yeah.
In that chorus line, I think that's just so brilliantly executed.
Really, thanks,
very, very cool.
Thank you very much.
So you guys are about to go on tour, and you have 25 years of music to cover. How does a band go about covering that in nowadays when you're about to hit the road?
Well, this is another interesting point, because like my wife always says that there's no band that she loves enough that she will sit through 3 hours it is a very contentious issue. So yeah. Because there's some people say, Bruce, you're too short. We want 3 hours, 3.5 hours, intermission.
Well, it's Prague fans, right? They like it.
Yeah, yeah. So I said we could, but actually, no, we prefer to keep it shorter, especially for standing shows. It's a nice problem to have this massive back catalogue. We think we've come up with a nice sort of the perfect sort of mix of new, the reimagined older stuff. There's about 5 or 6 or 7 tracks which are kind of untouchable that we just have to play. Otherwise, you know, we'd just be too much grief,
right?
If we didn't play them. So it's going to be, there's lots of new ones. And the difficulty is deciding which ones of the new album not to play, because it's so much fun to play the new ones live. So, but we're getting together in a couple of weeks to hone the set down. It's quite an art, cool, putting a set list together.
I imagine it's a challenge.
It is, yeah.
Are you coming back to the States again, you think, anytime soon?
Well, I hope we are trying to plan it end of the year. Probably coincide with the elections. So that'll be interesting.
We'll need something to keep our mind off of that mess.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, we won't get into that again. No. But it must be bad. It's bad for me in the UK watching, you know, thinking what might happen.
I try and tune it all out and just listen to more music. That's a better approach.
That's good advice. Good advice. Yeah.
Bruce, man, pleasure talking to you again as always. And
thank you very much.
Love the solo record. Love the new Pineapple Thief record. You're in a zone. You're doing really great stuff. So keep it up.
Thank you.
Good luck on the road, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
Cheers. Yeah. Bye. See you later.
Thanks to Bruce for the interview. Don't forget the new album, It Leads to This, comes out on February 9th. For upcoming news, interviews, reviews, and more, follow us on progboard.com, on all our socials, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we'll see you again soon. Thanks.